Glad to see a good group of you this morning. If you're visiting us, thank you for being here with us today. Hope you can be encouraged. Yes, excellent. So we have a really good group. We got a little bit cold this morning, but we're glad to be here. We're warm in here. Okay? So we have been talking about the family, and we have, I think this is the last Sunday in January, and then we have all February to go. So we'll try to spread the topics, try to address different topics as we wind down on this subject in the Bible. But we have been talking on Wednesday, we talked about some reasons for divorce of marriage or marriage failure. I want to continue on that thought. And on Wednesday, I tried to focus on general aspects of society mindset that has led to divorce. But today, I want to focus more on personal aspects. See, things in ourselves that can lead to marriage failure or divorce. Okay? Why do we talk about this topic? Because it is mentioned in the Bible, and it is something that in our society we need to be more informed, especially about what the Bible says concerning this topic and how we can prevent it. Okay? And maybe you've been married for 10, 20 years, 30 years, and but still we have children or grandchildren, people, friends, young men and women that we can influence or help when we have the opportunity concerning these topics. So I want to begin with one of the reasons in the individual basis that marriage fails, and that's when we don't understand that marriage is a commitment. Okay? It's a commitment. In fact, it's a long life commitment until death does part. That's what we say when we get married or someone gets married, until we're separated by death. And in fact, I think that's where we left, and I want to read that section of Romans 7. Let me pick up my Bible. Romans 7, and then the first couple of verses. I'm just going to read it out loud again, and then we'll move on from here. But we have this great example. And in the context, in Romans 6, he's talking about being slaves of sin and being free to righteousness. Okay? And he's making a comparison of the old law and the new law, and he's going to use the perfect example, which is marriage, to draw this point that the law must be dead in order for us to marry Christ. We cannot marry to both the law, Moses, and Christ at the same time. So that's what it says here, verse 1. Or do you not know, brethren, for I speak to those who know the law, that the law has dominion over a man as long as he lives? Okay, there's a law that has dominion for life. For the woman who has a husband is bound by the law to her husband as long as he lives. Now, there's different ways by which this bound begins. Okay, some cultures. In fact, when I got married, we had to sign a paper. And then there's some witnesses that have to sign the papers. My wife had to have her witnesses. I had to have my witnesses. And then when we got married, the judge said, anybody else wants to sign? And there was some other friends of mine, and they also signed. So we have several signatures, a lot of witnesses there on that wedding document or marriage certificate, rather. So that's when the marriage started. Okay? By law, in my case, it could not have started when the preacher delivered a lesson the day on our wedding day. It didn't start there. It started when we signed the document. That was for our case. So it depends on where you are on the culture. I know here, the minister has the power to declare you husband and wife. Okay? I think ministers have to apply for a license or something like that. I'm not informed. But it varies from place to place, okay? So we're bound by a law as long as he lives. Now, but if the husband dies, she's released from the law of her husband, okay? So we have this principle here, marriage for life. I think if only this principle was understood, I think it will save us a lot of time, and I can say it can save us a lot of headaches. You see, it can save us a lot of debates. If only this principle was honored. See, because then we start finding excuses, we start finding ways to get rid of our commitment, and then that's when the debate begins. Now, Jesus gave one excuse, no, but he gave another excuse, no, but you can divorce for any reason, and so on and so forth. And there's a lot of debate, a lot of, and of course, debate, I don't mean that every side is correct, but what I mean is people try to justify their actions, and then that's where the debate begins. Okay? If we would only understand, society will understand that it is a commitment for life, then things will change drastically. Okay? Now, the mindset in society, like I mentioned, they believe or we're taught that, okay, I'm going to get married, but if there's trouble, I'm just going to walk out. There's no commitment. Okay? No commitment to work it out when there's problems, when there's issues, when there's disagreement. No commitment. If it doesn't work, I'm just going to find someone else. I just walk out. Okay? That's the mindset that our children are going to get probably in school, I don't know, among the friends. See what I'm saying? Not in every school, of course, but I mean in general. They're going to face that. We need to be prepared to help them in that case. And the best way we can help them is by being committed parents ourselves first. And that's the first thing, because example draws really strongly. Okay? But if my children see me that I don't commit, and that I just leave them whenever there's conflict and then come back in 6 months or come back in a year, they're going to grow seeing that example, and they're going to be drawn, even though they know it's wrong, they're going to be drawn to do the same thing, because who did it? The strongest figure, the strongest influencer that a child can have, which is his dad and mom also. Okay? So it's important for us to begin there with the example. Okay? And marriage, as we read in Romans 7, it was designed to be permanent. That was the design. Notice, for instance, let me read in Malachi, if you want to go with me, just a few, several books back, just right before Matthew. And Malachi chapter 2, and I'm going to read just a few verses here on beginning verse 14. These verses are long. Let's see. I want to read before. Notice verse 11. Malachi 2:11. Notice, and all of this is talking about marriage. You know, Judah has dealt treacherously, and an abomination has been committed in Israel and in Jerusalem, for Judah has profaned what? The Lord's holy institution, which he loves. Look at this. The Lord's holy institution. Because marriage is to be set apart, is to be holy. A holy institution set apart from the influence of the outside thoughts or trends or whatever. It's a holy institution. Okay? It doesn't mean that those who dwell in the family are sinlessly perfect. But it means that we're committed to set this home apart. There's going to be things in this house that are not going to be permitted, just like they're permitted in somebody else's house or around society. Here is going to be different. Here we're going to pray. Here we're going to honor God. Here we're going to honor obedience. Here we're going to honor the role of man and woman. It's going to be different here. Okay? I'm going to treat my wife like she needs to be treated. Wife is going to treat her husband with love, and so on. Set apart. It's a holy institution. And God loves it. He has married the daughter of a foreign God. So here's another principle. And we'll get there to this principle about inner marrying. Okay? Now, let me go to verse 14. Yet you say, for what reason? Because the Lord has been witness between you and the wife of your youth, with whom you have dealt treacherously. Okay? They have married people from other countries, from other religious beliefs, okay, rather, and they have put away the wife of their youth, their first wife, in other words, okay, with whom you have dealt treacherously. Yet she is your companion, and your wife by covenant, like we just read in Romans chapter 7. But did he not make them one? Okay, notice that unity of the husband and wife, having a remnant for the spirit. And why one? He seeks godly offspring. Okay, here's one in the commitment, and of course one in their beliefs. Okay, they're the same mind. Why? Because he wants godly offspring. Okay? And let none deal treacherously with the wife of his youth. And then now verse 16. For the Lord God of Israel says that he hates divorce. You see, it wasn't the intention for divorce to happen. Okay? And in fact, if we go to Numbers 24, which we're not going to read at this moment, God never commanded through Moses that they divorce. It is not a commandment, because God hates divorce. But seeing these people were so hard-headed or hard-hearted, and they were already putting away their wives, he gave instructions how to behave, what to do in those cases, what to do and not to do, in order to protect the wife, okay? So it wasn't a commandment because God hates divorce, okay? So we see here there's a commitment, okay? But now, so marriage has been designed to be permanent. And we see in Matthew 19:9, of course, that there is an exception for that. And seeing the case that, for example, under the law of Moses, if we think about it, God made provision. If anyone would fornicate, he had to be stoned, okay? Or an adulterer had to be stoned, according to Leviticus 20, verse 10. Notice, and the man that committed adultery with another man's wife, even that he that committed adultery with his neighbor's wife, the adulterer and the adulteress shall be put to death. Leviticus 20 and verse 10. Okay? Now, if a man was, under the law of Moses, accused of fornication, of adultery, he was to be executed or put to death for that mistake. Okay? Now, the widow is free to remarry. Okay? But now, think about this. In the law of Moses, in the law of Christ, there isn't a commandment to put to death an adulterer. And I think there's something even worse than being put to death. Because in Hebrews 13:4, God says that the adulterers and fornicators, they belong to God. God is going to take care of them. He's going to take vengeance of what they did to this whole institution God loves so dearly, which is marriage. So what happens if the adulterer cannot be put to death? And this is a parallel from Moses. In Moses' time, the adulterer was to be stoned. The wife is free to remarry. Now, what happens here in the law of Christ? I cannot kill the adulterer. Is the wife free to remarry? Yes. She's free to remarry, even though I cannot kill him. But it's like if I was to kill him. Now she's free, because she's been betrayed from this long-lasting commitment. Okay, so this is for us important to consider, to think about this. Okay, now, so this is a commitment. Okay, now let me just mention something before I forget. One of the biggest adjustments when we commit is leaving the childhood home. Okay, and I don't know. I'm more inclined to see it, you know, there's young, in one way that's the biggest struggle. In another way I see young men eager to leave the house, okay, to go to college. Okay, some may come back, some may not, okay? But it is something that can hinder it. Us not being willing to leave mom and dad to form our own house. That's something that can hinder that commitment, okay? Now, before I forget, let me see. Now, when we talk about friends, now this young man, college years, he used to spending time with his friends, going hunting, going fishing, playing video games, you know, doing all those fun things. I'm not saying they're not fun, they're fun. Now there's a young lady, she's used to hanging out with her girlfriends and going to the cafe, I don't know, watching movies, spending time in social media and so on. But now, when you marry, something has to change in your previous habits. You cannot continue spending the same amount of time with your buddies when you have a wife at home. And wife cannot be spending the same amount of time with her girlfriends when she has a husband at home. In fact, I know of a couple, and the wife had a hobby, a sport hobby, that she loved so much. And of course she had friends that were part of that sport that she played growing up in high school and so on. When she got married, she kind of wanted to spend the same amount of time with her friends. And here her husband, I know, he was expecting something different. But she wouldn't give up her friends. So to make the story short, they didn't last too long. She needed to change that habit, or whatever we can call it. She needed to spend time with her husband. In fact, I spoke on the radio on Monterey, one of the last times I was there, and I addressed the topic of love, what love means. And one of the meanings I told in that lesson is that if the husband loves the wife, he's going to spend time with them. Okay, my lesson was simple, was from the Bible, but I cannot stop to tell you how many, several of the sisters, when I was, the radio station, the radio program is in the morning, 6:30 in the morning, rather 6 from 7:30 in the morning, and then we're home with breakfast and then we go for worship service. Several of the members, in fact, a lot of the members listen to the radio program. I said, Raphael, some of the wives, and one of them crying, Raphael, I wish my husband had heard that lesson. Because he's just out, and I want him here. That's why I married him, because I want to be with him. And so several ladies say, I thank you for that lesson, and so on. And I'm not saying anything about me, I'm just saying about this message. It's true. We are to commit to our spouses. That's the point that I'm trying to make. Okay, so commitment is... It's a big hindrance in our days. Let me see. I don't want to forget. Okay. Anyways, another reason for divorce, unless you want to make a comment here. Any complaint, chat? Am I okay? Am I on track? Okay, good. Because you're married. You can speak up. You have experience. Okay. Or anyone here. Okay, let's see. Another reason for marital failure or divorce in this case. And you know, it's not easy to be saying divorce all the time. It's not a fun word to mention. But we have to for the sake of this lesson. But anyways, I like good pineapples. And to be honest, in my opinion, the ones from Costa Rica, well, there's some from Mexico in the state of Veracruz that are just sweet. But in Costa Rica, I don't know, and in Guatemala, they make some of the best pineapples I've seen. Okay? And we, from time to time, we buy them an HEB. You read it, it's going to be either from Costa Rica or Guatemala. Okay? But sometimes I cut them too soon. What's going to happen if I slice them too soon? They're not ready yet. They're not mature enough. So another thing that hinders a marriage is maturity. When two immature persons decide to get married, that's not going to work. It's going to be like a green pineapple, not ready to eat. It's too soon. And let me tell you this. How long must a person wait? That depends on you. Some people get ready sooner than others. In general, women are ready sooner than men. That's for sure. That's how you're made. I'm not saying you're eager to get married. I'm saying that's how you're made. You're more mature in a way than just take two children of the same age, a boy and a girl. The girl may be doing chores already at home. Boy, he's playing video games. See what I'm saying? It's different. That's just the way we're made. And I think that's for a reason. We need to figure out why. Okay, well, we might need to wait sometime. So we have childhood, we have adolescence, there's stages in life. But some people just never develop maturity. I have a relative, direct relative of mine, And she's 46, but she's still an adolescent. She is. And to her credit, she never got married. I'm glad she did not, because she's not ready for marriage. I don't think she's ever been. She will be. I don't know. I mean, she can change definitely. But it's an example. Some people just never develop maturity. Okay? And then it's better for them not to marry, or for us not to marry if we get to that point. I had a college friend, or rather, someone I know from college, and they were dating, and it was during the college days, it was the girlfriend who approached him and said, "Hey, we're getting ready to graduate. Are we gonna get married or not?" And he's like, "What? What are you talking about? I want to travel. I want to work. I want to know the world. I want to enjoy the world piece by piece. I'm not thinking about getting married." You know, in some colleges, especially Christian colleges, and you already know this, and I'll tell you this because I've been there, there's a pressure that you need to get married before you graduate. And a lot of them are ready, but another group may not be ready. Okay, now what seemed to be a bad answer from that guy, he said, "I'm not ready, what are you talking about? I want to conquer the world." I mean, he said the truth. It's better for him to say, "No, I don't want to get married, I just want to enjoy life for now." And just break up with her and let her find someone who's ready to marry her. Because he wasn't ready. Okay, maybe another win for him at least. I mean, he didn't destroy a life later on by getting married in a hasty way, just because she wanted to, because she was ready. See what I'm saying? Anyways, you know, in that university I went to, there's the saying, they have some swings around the university, and the saying is, three swings and a ring. Did that make sense? When I first was there, what are you talking about? Well, you sit with your girlfriend three times, and then you're ready to get married. Okay, anyways, but that's something people need to mature, okay? Some at college are ready to get married, and that's great. They're young men that are ready to work, that are ready to sweat, that are ready to find a full-time job, start saving money for a house and so on and so on. Some are not, but some are. And that depends on the person, but it's better not to marry. Now, what happened to those who never develop maturity? Well, it might be because of selfishness. Okay, you know, as we grow up, children were selfish. Adolescents were still selfish. College years were still selfish. Okay, we need to learn to be unselfish and learn that it's more blessed to give than to receive before anyone is ready to get married. Because if you get married and the guy starts continue to buy his guns, vehicles, toys, computers, gadgets, and so on at the expense of his wives, that's not going to work. Same thing with the wife. If the wife gets married and then she starts buying expensive jewelry, the brand new cell phones, a lot of nice dresses, all of the best cosmetics, all of the oils, what is it called? I forgot the name of those oils. But anyways, she starts getting into all of that at the expense of the husband. That's not going to work. Okay, we need maturity. We need unselfishness. He said, "Well, I used to have 10 pairs of nice shoes. Well, now I'm going to trim it down to only 5 for the sake of my wife." Well, now you have children, one child. Okay, you have 5. Now you only have 4 for the sake of a child. Now you have two children. Now you're going to have, now it keep coming. So you have 5 children. Now there's no shoe left for you. See what I'm saying? You can go on flip-flops. But see, you see the mindset. And I'm going to tell you something very... I don't like to... It's not Christian to talk about yourself, so I try not to. But I do brag about my wife. I do. I'm proud of her. And let me tell you a secret. Oh, no, well, it's not a secret. I mean, everybody can know it. But, you know, for 5 years that we've been married, it is the first time she's gone to a saloon to do something to her hair. First time in 5 years. Okay? And it's not because, I mean, I'm not going to go into more details, but this is the first time. She's like what you can call, you know, what you would apply to persons, low maintenance, very low maintenance, okay? And if you have a wife like that, you're blessed, okay? Society tells you that you have to keep up with everyone. You have to keep up with the cell phone. You have to keep up with the jewelry. You have to keep up with the dress. And it's just bombarding everywhere. And I know there's Christians who learn to be like that, simple, okay? And I myself try to be simple too, okay? But if you have a husband that is low maintenance, you're also a blessed wife, okay? He's not spending around money here and there, bites a boat and say, oh, anyways, it's for the good of the family, I'm going to buy it, we're all going to ride on it. Yeah, but you're the one who won it, not me, says the wife. Anyways, but you know what I mean. You know more than I do what I'm trying to say. It's important to be mature, to have a good, successful marriage. Okay? Let me find my place here. I don't want to... Is there any comments so far here before I move ahead? Do you agree or with me or not? Okay? So it's important to do this. And if you allow me for 1 minute, we have some guests here who don't speak any English. Well, that's too far. I mean, they are acquainted with English. Let me just give them a brief of what we're talking about, if you don't mind, okay? Estamos hablando de lo que provoca el divorcio, ¿verdad? Y hemos visto un punto ahorita en cuanto al compromiso. Cuando uno no se compromete completamente, el matrimonio falla, ¿verdad? Y vimos varios textos, okay? Vimos Romanos 7, del 1 al 3, que el matrimonio es de por vida, y más especial, vimos el texto de Malaquías 2, todo el capítulo de Malaquías 2, donde habla que el matrimonio es una institución sagrada y especial por Dios, y Él odia el divorcio. Y este segundo punto, estamos hablando de la inmadurez. Cuando dos personas se casan y quieren vivir como solteros, entonces el matrimonio tiende a fallar. Y un tercer punto, el matrimonio falla cuando los cónyuges son destruidos por problemas internos. Y ahorita voy a mencionar cuatro problemas que afectan al matrimonio. ¿Se entendió? Okay, very good. Thank you. Okay, anyways, let's go to the next one. Thank you for your patience there. I'm going to make another pause if I need to keep them, catch them up. Okay? I have mentioned two reasons. Now let me mention a third before the bell catches up on us. Marriages fail or divorce happens when we are turned, you know, when Jesus said he was accused of casting out demons by the spirit of the devil. And he said, can a nation stand if it's divided against itself? Of course it can. And if it applies of cities, if it applies of nations, it also applies of individuals. And of course it applies of marriage. If the marriage, when they're supposed to be friends, okay, they are divided, that's gonna cause that small nation or institution to be divided. So there's different areas that causes harm in our lives. And I'm gonna mention four. There's this researches, and I'm gonna apply it with biblical text, okay? I'm not gonna mention just research, but it's important. These researchers, they can see a couple, spend time with them for 30 minutes the most, and they can tell you whether they're going or not going to divorce. They can. Because they have researched hundreds and hundreds of couples, and they have noticed it, some patterns that happen that lead to divorce, and one of them is criticism. Let's say I wake up in the morning and I told my wife, I say, hey, okay, it's time to go to church. Children are going to eat breakfast before they take a shower and get dressed, because if not, they're going to get dirty. And then what happens? She said, no, let them eat breakfast let them take a shower and get dressed and then eat breakfast. Okay, take a shower, dress them, go eat breakfast. Sure enough, they get dirty. And I say, I told you. You always do the same thing. You're always making me do things that are not right, and you're always getting those children dirty because you make a bad decision. You're just wrong. Is this seem like out of space, or is this seems like everyday language? This just happens every day. And if we can get out of hand with criticism, criticism destroys the other person. Okay? And the same thing can happen with the husband. Well, why do you always want to take a shower first? You're always so domineering. You're always so possessive. Criticizing, okay? And the problem is, we're not criticizing the actions. Notice to what I'm saying. We're criticizing the person's self-worth. We're criticizing the person, and that harms. So these researchers, they say, if you continue with criticism, you're leading to divorce. You're going on the highway to divorce. So what should we do? Husbands, we need to lower down on criticism. We need to criticize. Now, when we talk about religious, they say, okay, no one has a right to judge me. You cannot judge me. Oh, but when it comes to marriage, I do have the right to criticize and judge my partner, my spouse rather. See, it doesn't apply to me outside, but in my marriage, I can apply it to my wife. I can use it for my wife. So when Jesus said, do not judge, in Matthew 7, let me just read it. Why do you look at the and I let me just look it up because I don't know it by memory. At least not in English. I can quote it in Spanish if you want me to. Let's see. Judge not that you should not be judged. For with what judgment you judge, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, you will be measured back. And why do you look at the speck on your brother's eye and do not consider the plank on your own side? That's criticism, unjust criticism and then we are applying it on marriage. Why are you looking at your wife's eye and do not consider the plank in your own eye? Or how can you say to your wife, let me remove your speck from your eye and look, a plank is in your own eye. Hypocrite. First remove the plank from your own eye and then you should be clearer to remove the speck from your spouse's eye. Okay? Criticism destroys marriage. Okay? You always do this. You never do that. Okay? You are the type of person who does this. Criticizing the person. Another thing that hinders marriage is contempt. Okay? Contempt. And this is also this feeling of disdain, this feeling of scorn. Contempt is nothing else but proudness. I'm better than you. You're less than I. Okay? And then I insult her. I call her names. Okay? I use sarcasm. Okay? Mockery. You know, I was talking to a friend back in Colombia. And we keep in touch. He's a friend of Nancy and I. And she asks us Bible questions. And she's been struggling with her marriage. And she said once that her husband used mockery on her. You know, the word in Spanish for marriage, the word in Spanish is matrimonio. But he was making a play of words, and instead of saying matrimonio, he was saying martyr monio. You know, martyr, a martyr. In English, the word martyr, something who is like Stephen, first martyr. Instead of saying matrimonio, he was saying martyrmonio. Just making fun of his relationship with her. Yes, please. Martyr, yes. Martyr, thank you. Thank you. Sister Junior always has my back. I really appreciate it. Thank you. Yes. You know, we're in the learning process. When I first came to the States, I'm going to be honest, I thought I knew English. I've been going to English schools for several years. When I came to this, I realized how wrong I was. See what I'm saying? How big of a room I have for improvement. And that lesson stays with me. I mean, we're always improving. We're always learning. But anyways, okay, so he was using this sarcasm. And she told me, Raphael, I really am torn apart when he makes fun of me calling our relationship a martyrdom. See what I'm saying? Making fun of marriage. It hurts me. And then not only can it be done like using mockery and so on, we can sometimes roll our eyes, like saying, oh, here she goes again. Oh, here you go again. See what I'm saying? Like you're more important than her. Or like, you're more important than him. Okay, this is going to lead straight to divorce. Now, what about the Bible? What does the Bible say? Romans 12. Romans 12, first few verses. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove that which is good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Now notice verse 3. For I say, of the grace given to me, to everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith. Okay? For we are all members in one body, but all the members do not have the same function. This is talking about the church, of course. I understand, but it applies to the same institution God made holy, which is the marriage. Do not think more highly of yourself. Do not think you're doing your wife a favor by supporting her. That's your duty. You're not doing any favor. It's our duty. See what I'm saying? And then we'll feel so special because we're doing accomplishing things. I mean, we're just unprofitable servants. That's what we are at the end. Okay, and I'm picking on husbands because I make mistakes and I want to pick on myself. See what I'm saying? I want to learn myself. Anyway, so that's another, now there's another one, and I'm thinking the bell will ring, but notice to this. If my wife comes and tells me, Raphael, in my opinion, you should have done this. You should have hold hands and pray with the sister when we went and visit her. Why didn't you pray for her or hold hands? Okay, I have two options. Okay, I can say, yes, I think so. Thank you for that. You're right. It escaped my mind. Appreciate you looking after me. The other thing I can say, you should have done something. I'm the one who drove. I'm the one who carried the Bible. I'm the one whose idea was to come visit her in the birthplace. Why are you criticizing me? What am I doing? It's defensiveness. I'm defending myself. And I'm not talking about Mars. This happens every day here on Earth in everyday living couples. Okay? Defensiveness. We make excuses like Adam and Eve. First thing, God comes, talks to them. Instead of saying, yes, sir, I'm sorry. Yes, I sinned. I ate of the fruit. He said, no, she gave it to me. And then she goes to the wife, maybe hoping she has more sense at that moment, which I think in general sometimes women have more sense, but this time Eve failed us. Because she said, no, it's the serpent made me eat. See what I'm saying? We excuse ourselves. What happened to the man with the one talent? He defended himself. He said, yeah, I knew you were a really hard master. I knew you gather what you didn't sow, you reap what you didn't sow, but here's your talent. Here's my excuse. Here's your talent. Here's back. Defensiveness. What doesn't he say? Well, I know, I realize, compared to the 5 talented men, 2 talented men, I made a mistake. I should have been more active. I should have done good. Please forgive me. No, he defended himself. Defensiveness. See what I'm saying? It's all over the Bible. You go to Luke chapter 14, you're going to read the parable of the great feast, and that's the main point of that parable, is full of excuses. And then fear produces excuses. See what I'm saying? Fear produces excuses. And in marriage, defensiveness is not going to work. Okay? They don't go together. When the husband is continually making excuses, cross-complaining, okay? When he disagrees and then cause complaints again. When he says, yes, but. Okay? There is just a lot of defensiveness. Okay? When sometimes you repeat yourself out loud despite your wife talking, or the wife's repeating herself out loud despite her husband talking. Defensiveness. Why don't you just say, yes, sit down and say, yes, thank you. Appreciate you for pointing out my mistakes. You're looking out for me. This is a teamwork. Okay, but when we act defensive, it's not teamwork. It's just me who matters. Okay? And last one, I think we're gonna have a couple of minutes. They call it stonewalling. Okay? And I think you know what it means. Stonewalling is just, withdrawing myself from any conversation for my spouse. Okay? I'm trying to withdraw, with the excuse of avoiding conflict. But in fact, what I'm doing is hurting my parent, my wife, my spouse, by not wanting to talk, just ignoring her, conveying this disapproval of her. Okay, I'm sitting there, and then she's talking to me, and I say, oh, la 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 la, blah blah blah, or whatever. See, that's stonewalling. Or she's talking to you, and you just radically just, okay, what about soccer? You change the subject just radically. That's stonewalling. Okay, when you just disconnect from the conversation, ignore what she's saying or what he's saying. Okay, or you just remain silent when she's or he's telling you something. Okay, and so on. Or maybe she starts talking to you, or he starts talking to you, and you just walk out. That's stonewalling. Okay. Now, what does the Bible says concerning this? Well, if we think, for instance, in, and I'm going to read just one verse in Philippians 2, verse 3 and 4. Philippians 2, verse 3 and 4. It says, let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in loneliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look out not for his own interest, but also for the interest of others. This is what the Bible teaches. No stonewalling here. No icy treatment, or we call it in Spanish the law of the ice, okay, where spouses can be in the home for days without speaking to each other. Okay, stonewalling, just canceling my partner. Okay. And again, I'm not talking about Mars. I'm talking about everyday marriages that just don't speak to each other for who knows, days, maybe even weeks. Okay, and that's stonewalling. Those who know, those who have researched the families, they say if you practice any of these four, we can predict with a 90%, 95% accuracy that you're heading for divorce. See, with a 30-minute sitting talking with the couple. We can predict. So the Bible has already protected us from all of these actions. Just a matter of us taking heed to what the Bible says concerning this. So we look only at three causes for marriage failure or divorce. Okay, the first one we mention is the lack of commitment. Okay, second we mention is the lack of maturity. Okay, and the third we mention is lack of unity, we can call it like that, okay? Lack of unity among them, the spouses. Any comment before the bell rings? Because it's about to ring. Now, everything I tell you here about my wife, just keep it private, okay? I don't want to get in trouble. All right? It's just between you and I, all right? No, I'm just kidding. But anyways, thank you for your attention.